Hey, hey, my fellow dream chasers, it's Princess Fizz here. Welcome to another episode of I Have a Dream Show, bringing you multimillionaires from around the world to hear their unique journeys to success, great business wisdom, free mentoring and inspiration. Now, if you're looking to boost your online presence as a small business owner and stand out from the noise, you have to check out my free 10-day course on how to create an amazing web TV show or podcast for any industry. Go to becomeamediapreneur.com and get instant access to the course, and I'll get you ready for launch within 10 days. If you've seen my web TV shows and love my makeup, check out Moonstruck 3D Fiber Lashes, which is the best-selling product by Unique, at ihaveadreamshow.com/beauty. And if you prefer to watch the video shows, then you can go to ihaveadreamshow.com/shows, where there's a library of all the I Have a Dream shows to date. So now take out your notepads and enjoy the show. Oh my God. Wow, I absolutely love my guest today. She is an amazing thought leader. She's been on stages of the world like TED Talks, Google stage, and she's an author as well of Standout and Reinventing You. And we'll be sharing her story today, and also she'll be tapping in into exactly how to create your story, how to create a brand, how to create your voice, how to find your voice, and create a following around it. So stay tuned. Welcome, Dory. Oh my goodness, how are you?
Thank you. I'm great. It's good to be talking with you.
It is. I've been really looking forward to it, and I know a lot of people have been looking forward. They know about you, and they already follow you, but here we're going to tap into your brain a bit. So just for those people that are looking to start a business, or they're a little bit wary about it, thinking where these entrepreneurs come from the sky, can anyone be an entrepreneur? How did you get started?
Yeah, I absolutely believe that anyone can be an entrepreneur. I mean, this is not a question of skills, because you can learn the skills. It's really a question of mindset. And I think that the people who can be a successful entrepreneur are the people who are really willing to push themselves and to realize that they're not entitled to anything by the universe. They have to work for something. And I think that, you know, there are some really interesting studies about the shift that's taking place in the workplace. I mean, certainly it's happening very acutely in the U.S., but I think around the world we're really beginning to see evidence of this. There's a well-known study by Intuit that by the year 2020, 40% of the American workforce is going to be contract or freelancers, essentially entrepreneurs. Yeah. And so even people who are not literally entrepreneurs, if they want to be successful in that world, they need to start thinking that way and saying, all right, I can't just expect that if I do my little thing, I'll get paid for it. You have to start asking the next question, which is the thing that I do actually valuable in the world? And is it valuable enough that people are willing to pay for it? And if you can answer that affirmatively and you're willing to push yourself, then I think anyone can be an entrepreneur.
It's amazing, Dory, that you actually touched on this, because it's moving towards the performance, isn't it? Performance-based hiring, and you know, you've got a lot of competition against you. It's about how someone stands out now, isn't it? According to their ability, their knowledge, etc. So it's moving towards that. It's not like just turning up, giving your time, and getting money for that anymore, is it? It's kind of moving to a new economy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think that it actually is a positive evolution. I mean, it's something that is more quote-unquote dangerous for people who have been able to skate by in the past, but it also has the potential for tremendous reward for the people who really do contribute a lot. I mean, I liken it, if we think of it in the media world, it used to be, you know, you'd pay whatever, you know, let's say $500,000 for a commercial on a television show during prime time, when everybody's theoretically watching it. But you don't know if people watched it. They might go and, you know, go to the refrigerator and get snacks or whatever. Nobody knows. You bought the time and you hoped and you guessed. Okay. Now, a lot of advertising online is pay-per-click. You know that people clicked on it, that they were interested enough to say, oh yeah, I want to learn more about that. So it's much more refined. And similarly, when it comes to people and workplace performance, who cares if you were there for 8 hours or 10 hours? It's what you actually do in that time that matters.
That's absolutely fantastic, guys. Thank you. Dory, one thing I want to play a bit of devil's advocate here, okay? And actually stick up, in a way, for the people that are questioning about their self-worth of being entrepreneurs. It's the education, Dory. You know, they've been taught all their lives that they have to go a certain way. And I think that the society is kind of designed like that to keep people in the system and not be free and think differently and think for themselves and grow. So how do you kind of help that? How do you help people understand that they need to be aware of this? Because they might not know. They might not know because that's what they've been taught all their lives.
Sure. Well, it's, you know, it is interesting because it really is a kind of paradigm shift. And it's one that takes a while to trickle down. There's a friend of mine, an interesting thinker, business thinker here in the U.S., a guy named James Altucher. And he, you know, he has a podcast, and I was just listening to it yesterday, and he was talking about jobs, the evolution of jobs, and he was interviewing somebody, and he asked them, he's like, well, if you know, there's this movement now, if people are talking about how it is that entrepreneurship is actually, you know, much safer in a lot of ways than just, you know, staying in a company and saying, oh, I want a good job, why is it that my own 13-year-old daughter is saying, oh gosh, I need to get a secure job? Like, why, you know, why is it that this myth keeps persisting? And the truth is that it is really, really culturally ingrained, and it's for a good reason, which is that for the past, let's say, 50 to 75 years, you know, the past, like, let's say, three generations, that's been really good advice. Getting a safe, secure job was good advice because you would, you know, you would get pensions, you'd have a lot of security. There were not the opportunities that we have today, thanks to things like the internet, to really dramatically leverage your skills. If you were a great teacher, all you could ever do is, you know, teach 20 or 50 people at a time because there wasn't the capability to teach 200,000 people at a time like you can do now on the internet. And so your impact was limited, and so your wages were limited. But it's outmoded thinking. And if we're listening to people who did things that were successful 20 years ago or 40 years ago, I mean, notably what your parents and your grandparents probably think is really excellent advice, that's really no longer the case. I mean, I think about the advice that I got from my parents, and my mom in particular really wanted me to go to law school. That was what she thought would be a really good plan for me. And I think about what would have happened if I had gone to law school. And I mean, you know, it wouldn't have been the end of the world, but I would have graduated from law school in the year 2000. Fine, great, high times. You're rolling in 2000. The economy was great. But all right, let's follow it out a little bit more. Usually it takes about somewhere between 7 and 9 years to become a law firm partner. If I had signed on at a law firm right out of school and I had said, you know what, I'm going to be a partner, this is going to be my security for life, I would have been coming up for partnership right at the time of the 2008 financial crisis. I probably would have not only not become a partner, I probably would have lost my job, and everything that I had worked for would have really been in jeopardy. And so the things that seem safe often are not.
Often are not. Absolutely fantastic. Now, guys, restream this on Meerkat. Thank you so much for those who have restreamed. M. Stinson, thank you very much. I can't call out all of them, but thank you, thank you, thank you. And the people that need to ask questions, hold on. You can ask questions below, or you can actually email me at welcome@ihaveadreamshow.com if you want to keep them private or anything like that. But Dory, so let's talk about, before we get into questions and things, let's talk about you. I mean, who inspired you? How did you kind of step away from what's being taught and free yourself and actually start exploring what you want to do and how you want to, where did the idea come from of what you're doing, etc.? Just kind of take us back through that.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't give myself much credit, you know, for being prescient or having some alternate vision. No. It was definitely not that. I am doing what I'm doing now because I had the same fixed ideas about what the realm of possibility was. Right. And I, early in my career, just had doors shut to me. That was really the reason. And so I had to find something else to do. Oh. So, you know, for me, the formative experience is first, I got a master's degree in theology, and my first thought, I really liked academia, I loved studying, I loved writing and all this stuff. I thought, oh, I'll be a professor. And so my first, sort of failure, you could say, was that I had applied to doctoral programs and I got turned down by every single doctoral program that I applied to. And so, okay, I guess I'm not going to be a professor. So then I came up with actually what I thought was a pretty good second idea. And I thought, okay, well, what if I'm a journalist? I can still write. I can do interesting things. It'll be, you know, great experiences. That's what I'll do. And I was so happy when I got a job at a cool paper covering politics. I thought it would be fantastic. And I thought, all right, I'll just be a journalist. That'll be a great career path for me. And then about a year into my career, I got laid off. Right. And I couldn't get another job in journalism because that was really the point where the industry started contracting. And in fact, over the course of this past decade, from 2000 to 2010, I'm assuming it's probably the same in Britain, but in the U.S., nearly 40% of American newsroom journalists lost their jobs.
Right.
So you just couldn't get a job. So I said, all right, what else? So because I had been covering politics, I had the opportunity to go on to the other side and start working for political campaigns.
Uh-huh.
And so I became a spokesperson on political campaigns, first for a governor's race, then for a presidential race. And both of my candidates lost. So I was not having a lot of luck.
Right, yes.
Yeah, I mean, they were. They were good ideas. All of them could have been really good careers, you know, but they were old school careers.
Yeah.
Finally, I ended up taking a job after the campaign ended, running a small nonprofit. And ironically, that was the thing that gave me my future direction, because I realized in the course of running this nonprofit that it was exactly the same thing as running a business. And I thought, oh, I know how to run a business now. Why don't I run a business for myself? And that was what kicked off what I've been doing for the past decade.
Excellent, excellent. That's absolutely fantastic. So the people that are watching this show right now, guys, if you feel that you've got this kind of a dilemma where, you know, Dory, we've got bills to pay, okay? I understand that. You know, people have got commitments. I don't know if people are, parents on this show, you know, they've got kids to look after. And I feel that people are so stuck in that how to make the money, right, that they trap the creativity that's needed to be an entrepreneur. And how do you free yourself of that? How do you stop worrying about your monthly payments, whatever they are, financial commitments, and actually come up with an idea?
yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's a couple of answers to that. I mean, one is that you can never really stop worrying about it. I mean, there's always going to be certain things you absolutely have to do in terms of paying your expenses and taking care of your family.
Yeah.
So there has to be a sort of baseline for it. But there are ways to accommodate around that. And so a few of the things that I did and that I would recommend other people do it. Number one, prior to launching your entrepreneurial effort, I mean, this is not something that you need to necessarily start, you know, today. What I did when I came up with the idea for starting my business was I had this idea that I wanted to do it, and I spent about a year planning for it. And so during that period, I read a million books, I took a bunch of classes, and I tried to get everything ready and teed up so that when I did launch, I would have all the knowledge and skills that I needed so that I could do it well. Because if you have not been an entrepreneur, probably literally at this moment, I'm willing to bet that for almost anyone, there are gaps in your knowledge. There's things you know how to do, but there's also things you don't know how to do.
Right.
I didn't know how to do bookkeeping, for instance. That was not something that I had ever really had to do for the jobs that I had had, but I realized, okay, if I'm running my own business, I really ought to get to understand that.
Right.
So, you know, things like that. So you can take a period of time where you're essentially training and planning and preparing, and during that time, you should try to sock away as much money as possible, because you want to launch with savings, because you're not going to get your first client, you know, on day one. There's going to be a lag, so you want to have some money in the bank so you don't have to get desperate. That's the first thing. The second thing is that I think it is really important for entrepreneurs to live below their means, certainly for, you know, the first while that you're doing it, until you really have something that is undeniable and sustainable success. I think that, you know, this vision of, oh, I'll be an entrepreneur and I can drive a Maserati or whatever. I mean, you know, that's nice when you IPO. But in the early stages, what is actually I would say for almost anyone, going to make you feel better and happier and more secure is knowing it's not about the things that you're possessing. It's about the fact that you suddenly have autonomy and you have choice. And the more money that you have at your disposal, cash, liquid cash, that you have at your disposal, the more choice you're going to have. So for me, just prior to starting my business, I actually bought my first condo. And I... or flat, as you would say, and so I bought this flat. I deliberately bought it. It was nice. I mean, I liked it. It was a beautiful apartment, but it was in a neighborhood that, you know, you could say it was an emerging neighborhood. It was not where the cool kids lived. I think that most of my friends had never even been to this neighborhood, and. You know, I mean, a couple of years after I bought, the city's largest drug bust in history was literally, like, almost exactly across the street from my house. They, you know, it was, like, tons of heroin and whatever. I mean, it's not like I was living in a war zone. I wouldn't do that. But it was an area that was not filled with a bunch of yuppies, you know? It was a Latin immigrant area. And the reason that I did that is that I wanted to know that no matter what, I could always pay my mortgage. Always. I could do it in my sleep. And having that confidence allowed me to always make good choices about the projects I wanted to do and the ones I didn't want to do.
Do you know what? I'm so glad you touched on that, because one key area I've learned as an entrepreneur is really simplifying your life down while you're on your journey. Because, you know, just think little things like, you know, having the same meal each day. It just stops you from thinking, overthinking on things that aren't important in a way. Does that make sense? Like wearing the same type of clothes or, you know, I know it's not easy for a lot of people and, you know, they want to kind of stand, look good in society, but these are the kind of sacrifices the entrepreneurs make, you know, and just keeping your life as simple as possible and putting yourself in a situation where you want to kind of create that desperation to get out of it and move you faster. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think with, you know, with the wardrobe stuff, I think sometimes it gets a little overblown, you know, in the sense that, like, oh my God, if it's going to strain your brain that much to have the red tie versus the blue tie. but I think that, you know, and I think a lot of people who do it sort of do that a little bit more as like a branding thing rather than a decision thing. But I, you know, overall, I agree with you. I think that that having certain things be simplified is really important. I mean, for instance, lunch, right? Lunch is something that, I mean, you could spend 2 hours at lunch just like going and getting it or cooking it or, you know, whatever. And if you just set up a ritual where it's like, you know what, I mean, for me, for instance, I live half a block away from a Chipotle, which I don't know if you have that in England, but it's like a, you know, like a burrito chain.
Yeah, I love it. It's fantastic food, yeah.
Yeah, it's really great. You know, it's easy, it's quick, it's whatever. And so I know, you know, I mean, most, you know, at least 2 or 3 days a week, I will probably just go and grab some Chipotle because I know that it's fast, I know it's easy, I don't have to think about it, I know what I want to order, and also it's you know, things like that are actually, there are other benefits too. There's health benefits because you don't have to constantly be thinking about, oh, how many calories does this have? Is this healthy? Whatever. Like, you know that, you know, they, if you're eating the same thing and holding that variable constant and you're trying to lose weight or keep your weight, that's a really easy way to do that and eliminate the guesswork. So something like that that can save you time, I'm a huge fan of.
That's fantastic. Absolutely wonderful. Now, I'm actually kind of moving swiftly along because I've got so much to cover with you, Dory. Right. Now, an idea. Okay. Now, we're inspired by so many things in the day. And you need that kind of level of awareness in a way to understand that you've got an inspiration from somewhere. And I believe that an idea is just a wish if it's not written down. Do you feel... a couple of questions here. How do you manifest an idea, and how do you know the idea that you're having is the right one?
Yeah, so it's an important question. In my book Standout, I actually talk about three phases
Yeah.
of spreading your idea.
Right.
And, you know, so basically what I did in Standout was I interviewed about 50 top thought leaders in different fields to try to understand how it was that they came to the top of their fields and built a following. And for almost all of them, I discovered that there was really this three-step process for spreading it. So the first step is what I call building your network. Next is building your audience, and third is building your community. And so this first part, building your network, is the place where, you know, I think some people drop the ball on this a little bit because they have this idea and they think, oh, fantastic, this great idea, I'm going to just share it with the world. And so they immediately start blogging about it, speaking about it, writing about it, you know, all this stuff. That's great, but it actually is likely to be more effective if you do the first part first. Building the network. And what this means is essentially assembling a group of like-minded people whose judgment you trust around you. Your kitchen cabinet, your personal board of directors, your mastermind group, however you want to describe it, because these are the folks that can provide a kind of early gut check about whether they agree that the idea is good. They might see holes in it that you don't see, and they can help you refine it to the point so that when you actually do present it to the public, it's in the best possible shape. Now, that doesn't guarantee that the public is going to love it, but it means that it's as good as it can be at that point. And so I think that that's really the first thing. You know, how do you know if it's a good idea? Well, it's, you know, this two-phase process. One is I would run it by you know, your network of people that you trust. Mm-hmm. And if one person hates it, whatever, but if all of them hate it, that's probably a bad sign.
Right.
And then, you know, once you surmount that, then you can go out and test it with the general public.
That's fantastic, Dorian. We've got a question coming in. I'm going to take this because it's related. Julie, thank you very much for tuning into the I Have a Dream show. She's asking, I'm quite new. The only people I know is friends and family. How do I create a network of people, of like-minded people, because they don't understand what I want to do? That's a good question.
That's a great question. I love that. Yeah. So I think that there's a lot of different ways to do it. And, you know, if you know, Judy's typing, maybe she can tell me what field she's in so I can make it even more personally tailored.
It is.
But anyway, just to sort of get started on the answer, I think there's a lot of different ways that you can do this. I mean, just to pick one example, let's say that Judy wants to start a blog or a podcast or something like that. How do you build a network? Well, one really good way to do it is to say, all right, I'm making this up. She's a floral designer. Uh-huh. So she says, all right, I'm going to start a blog on floral design. What I'm going to do is I'm going to interview all of the top floral designers in my city to get their perspective about, you know, trends in the industry or, you know, common mistakes or whatever, whatever. And so if you say, hey, I have this blog, I want to interview you for it, people are probably going to say yes,
yeah.
And you're going to get to meet them. You're going to make them look good. You're coming in and leading with a favor, essentially. And, you know, you'll promote it. They'll have a nice clip they can show everybody. And so they'll get to know who you are. And they'll sort of feel like, oh, I kind of owe this woman one. And so that doesn't immediately mean that you have a relationship, but it means you have a start of a relationship and that they at least know who you are. So then that's the opportunity that once you do that, it's like, all right, well, how do you build on it? So maybe, you know, once you've interviewed a bunch of people, let's say you've interviewed 10 floral designers, at that point, you've got a pretty good quorum. You can say, you know what, I'm going to have a dinner party, and I'm going to invite, you know, it's going to be an all floral designer dinner party, and we're just going to get together and talk and get to know each other and build a community. And probably, you know, people, I do this for business authors here in New York. I have these business author dinners. People love it because they get to have an opportunity to network with their peers, and they will be grateful to you for providing that opportunity.
That's fantastic. She's actually in weight loss. So yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All these things. And also she can go to events, can't she? And get to know people at the event, network marketing, network events according to that area or whatever. So that's a really good way. So Dory, say for instance, you create an idea, how much of your own values, right, core values, first of all, how do you figure out what your core values are, what your principles are, and how do you align them with the brand that you're creating around your idea?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So, you know, when we think about core values, you know, I have a friend who is leading a strategic planning retreat for a nonprofit that she's on the board of, and you know, one of the standard things I've done this, you know, back in my days when I was doing a lot more hands-on consulting, I still do a little bit, but you know, I started out, you know, really doing a ton of consulting work. And so, you know, it's a common thing, right, is when you're having a strategic planning retreat, which you do every few years, you clarify, okay, what's our mission, what's our vision, what are our values, and then stemming from that, what are the priorities that we want to take on that are most relevant to those things? Yeah. As an individual, you know, I feel like certainly it's important in general to know what your values are, but I also think that, you know, you don't necessarily need to articulate it the way that an entity does. The reason is that an entity, like, I mean, a nonprofit, it's got its executive director, it's got its staff members, it's got its board, it's got its advisory board. There are so many cooks in the kitchen that it would be really easy for one person to just sort of steer it off in one direction if he had an agenda. And so you need to have a common articulated framework so that everybody has a document to refer to say, now, wait a minute, you know, we shouldn't be focusing on this because really what we're about is this. Yeah. For an individual, I actually think that in some cases there's ways where people can overthink these things. And so, you know, what are your values? I mean, I think that probably for me, the best way to think about our values, it's not necessarily, you know, sitting down and making a list of like, oh, I believe in honesty and I believe in hard work. You know, I mean, we all do, right? But the thing that I would suggest that people do, and when I give talks, I give a lot of keynote speeches, this is one of the things that I talk about sometimes, is that what I actually think is really important for people to do is to write down their war stories. And what I mean by that is that for all of us, we have moments in our professional life, or in our personal life for that matter, but that really stand out. These are the kinds of things that, you know, if you asked your partner or your close colleague or something, and you said to them, hey, you know, if you're thinking about it, like stories that I tell a lot, like stories that I might have mentioned or alluded to like three or more times, what are they? And there's probably going to be a couple where it's like, oh my God, you always talk about the time that blah, blah, blah. And that's actually really useful information. That's actually crucial because clearly, if it's something that you're talking about and referring to regularly, it is forming, it's serving this sort of formative role in your brain. It is, something that is shaping your worldview. And getting in touch with that is actually really powerful because there's something there. There's a reason you're talking about it. And maybe it's because that was the moment when you really learned what teamwork was like, or when you really learned, you know, you should only trust somebody if X, Y, and Z. But I think that actually might be the key thing, is understanding your war stories and extrapolating outward from that the principles and values that matter the most to you.
I love that. I absolutely love that. So anything that's kind of impacted you in a way and created a change in you in that at that time, it's something that's important to you, isn't it? So it's a good idea to identify that and lead with that kind of idea, those ideas, right?
For sure, yes.
I love that. George, this is a question that you have just asked. I think it's quite related to this. I mean, he said, how do I create my story? So I think this is exactly what you've just described, Dory, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, take an afternoon at a cafe or something like that and just, you know, write down your stories and begin to look for common patterns between them. You know, is it that a lot of the stories deal with certain themes about, you know, the importance of perseverance or the importance of, you know, giving people opportunities to, you know, showing them enough trust so that they have room to prove themselves or something like that. Finding those themes and commonalities can be quite valuable.
That's fantastic. Excellent. Well, Stella, thank you very much for joining the I Have a Dream show. You are fabulous. She comes to every show. She's from Spain, and now she's asking, hold on, let me just read this. You guys, you have to keep your stories short, right? So I can read them live. I can't read essays. So she's basically saying that, how do I do this for network marketing? I think we're going to come to this story in a minute. Where,
sure.
You know, they are promoting the same products, like say, okay, all the network marketers on this show today, right? I know that you are doing the same products and services as other distributors. So you are part of a brand in a way already. How do you create a brand within a brand? Which is a very good question, Stella. I think it's related to this. Verify if this is what you mean, but yeah. How do you create your own voice inside a brand?
That's what yeah. Yeah, so it's a really great question because, you know, Stella's right. I mean, if you are operating your own business that is independent of any other entity, you yeah. can certainly distinguish yourself based on your service offerings. I mean, I might be a web designer specializing in websites for authors, and you might be a web designer specializing in web design for sports teams. Yeah. And so, okay, no problem. We all know who our clients are and who we should be targeting, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But if you are, you know, selling the same products, that what do you do? So there's a couple of things that that I would suggest. One is that even if the actual products are the same, you could distinguish based on target audiences that you're approaching. These are usually things, not exclusively, but usually things that are based on who you know or some element of yourself. So for instance, if, you know, let's say you are a really big sports person and, you know, every season you play a different sport. Well, you know, maybe you're the way you differentiate yourself, you know, I mean, everybody needs whatever, shampoo or, you know, something like that, but, you know, or makeup or whatever. But because who you know is female athletes, maybe that is the target audience that you're going to be seeking. And so you'll have a disproportionate advantage there because you have the personal relationships and you can you know target it and relate to it. Oh, you know, after a big game you're all sweaty, but you know you still want to look good when you're going out, you know, to party afterwards, so this is the perfect thing, whatever. So differentiation through target audience is one thing. The other thing, of course, is, and this is true for any salesperson really, is differentiating yourself on the strength of your relationship. And so this is where I think that you know, something that a lot of people don't think of enough. The reason that they're buying is oftentimes you. I mean, sure, I might need shampoo. I mean, every human being needs shampoo, but it would probably, in some cases, just be easier for me to buy it at the drugstore. But I'm buying it through you because I like you, because I want to help you, et cetera. And so leveraging the strength of your relationship is really crucial. And so thinking through, I mean, I'm willing to bet that for almost any network marketer, they can really increase their business substantially. I mean, you can probably, you know, just by doing this 10, 20%, whatever, just, you know, kick it up by coming up with a really strategic contact management and follow-up system. Right. And so, for instance, one that I use is called Contactually, but, you know, there's other competitors as well. But for Contactually, they actually have a system where you can put all of your contacts into what they call buckets, and you can indicate, all right, these are people who are just acquaintances, so I don't need to talk to them that often. These are like my current customers, so I want to talk to them at least every month. These are prospective customers, so maybe I want to talk to them every 60 days. Whatever it is, you can specify. But it actually interfaces with your Gmail and or, you know, whatever your provider is, and it will cross-reference it. And so if I've said that I want to talk to Princess Fizz every 60 days, and it looks on my Gmail and it says, oh, nope, sorry, you haven't talked to her, you know, for 70 days, it's going to send me an email reminder and it's going to say, Dory, it's time to follow up. And so doing things like that so that you can keep in good touch and stay top of mind with people actually becomes a real competitive advantage.
So using things that will help you with your production and, you know, tools and people. This is another thing, Dory, because I think a lot of people, when they start businesses, right, they don't seem to understand that tasks have value, you know, according to how much you're worth. So, you know, you've got the top producing tasks that will give the biggest value, and then you've got the low tasks that you can delegate. And people are afraid of delegating, maybe because they don't understand, or, you know, or how do you work out? How do you personally work out what tasks are priority and which ones you should outsource according to the value that they provide?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, I mean, there's a few different frameworks that you can use for these things, but ultimately you should be guided, you know, as they say, by highest and best use, right? So yeah. The question is, what is the thing that really only you can do? What is the thing that you do best and where you really excel and add personal value? I'm willing to bet that for most people who have some kind of a sales function, you know, network marketers would be a key example, spending time face-to-face with your current clients or a strong prospective client, that is the most valuable thing. You know, that's how you build a relationship. That's how you get the sale. Yes. And so anything besides you spending time either on the phone or hopefully face-to-face with your clients, that takes less priority. And so from that, you could say, okay, well, you know, different administrative tasks, you know, okay, my bookkeeping, I guess I could have somebody else do that. Maybe content creation, you know, blogging or whatever, maybe I could have somebody else do that. Because the thing that I want to do is be face-to-face and only I can do that. They're not going to buy from me if I send them some intern that they don't know. Yeah. They're going to buy from me because it's me. So that's, you know, that's one way to think of that. I mean, for me personally, I do a lot of writing and content creation. That's a big deal for me because it's relatively easy for me compared to other people because I trained as a journalist, so I can do it pretty well. But also, I think, you know, in terms of establishing my, you know, quote unquote thought leadership and getting my ideas out there, it's important for me not to be hiding behind a ghostwriter or something like that. Some people, if writing isn't your thing or you're not comfortable with it or if it takes you 100 hours, fine, no problem. But for me, I consider it a value that I do that, whereas other things I can feel freer about outsourcing.
That's brilliant. I love that you mentioned that because I think that's where you have to identify what is it that you can do the best that you can't delegate and only you can do it. And that's where your value is when you provide that as a service. And so I love that. Oh my goodness. So there's so much more I want to cover, Dory. You know, my head's spinning right now. But more about you, Dory. So as you are on the entrepreneurial path, I'm sure it's like a roller coaster, isn't it? Ups and downs, you know, highs and lows. Can you identify a time where it was exceptionally challenging and you just thought, oh my goodness, I really can't do this anymore? What was that time like? How did you overcome that?
Yeah. I mean, I think the hardest thing about entrepreneurship for a lot of people, and certainly this is the case for me as well, is just that you have extreme variability in income. You know, you're going to have some months that are incredibly lucrative, and you're going to have some months, you know, where you just make zero. Yeah. And, you know, that's just the way it rolls. And so it can be pretty alarming, especially because we are used to this model of, you know, steady jobs where you get a certain amount every month in your bank, and you know that you can count on that and plan for it. So for entrepreneurship, the swings can be a little bit discomforting. And so I remember in particular, my first book came out in the spring of 2013. And so leading up to that, for, you know, I'll say the last maybe 3 or 4 months of 2012, just for no reason at all that I could pinpoint, I just stopped getting business. Like, nobody was calling. And I didn't know why. I didn't feel like I was doing anything different. But it was just like, nope, nothing happening. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was an anomaly. I mean, that's really all it was. There was not a sort of strategic change that I had made or that, you know, was out there in the marketplace. But nonetheless, it was really disturbing. And so I figured, all right, I need to wait this out. And I figured that when my book came out, I would get a burst of publicity that would probably lead to new, to new opportunities. But that was sort of a wager that I made. But I just said to myself, like, okay, I mean, clearly, if this doesn't change, like, even after your book comes out, I mean, you might have to reevaluate this because you got to do something to get money. But I just had to counsel myself to calm down and wait and see if things would turn, and they did. But sometimes you have to wait for a while, which is, you know, going back to our previous point, that's why it's really important to have a stockpile of cash so that you can wait out these anomalies.
Right, lovely, absolutely fabulous. And what about when, how about innovation? I mean, you know, you launched an idea, but you need to kind of keep that idea alive with different, you know, the movements happening in the environment around you or your workplace. How do you keep up with knowledge that you require, things that you don't know yet? You know, how do you keep up with the super, super experts that seem to know it all. How do you align yourself with that type of knowledge so you are ready to make a change when you need to?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that I did for a number of years in the early days of my business was I read classic business books really extensively. I mean, I do that less now because I've read a lot of them already. Uh-huh. But it was really important to me to kind of read all of the canonical works in the field. And so I would just, I was starting out, so I didn't have a ton of money. I would just get them all out of the library, and I'd read multiple books a week. Now that I'm actually an author, I'm like, no, don't use the library. Fuck the library. Buy them. But but at the time, I would use the library. But that was really helpful because I was able to get a lot of knowledge, and it gave me a good framework to be able to talk about things and think about things. These days, the way that I stay on top of things, I mean, you know, for every field, people can, you know, sort of find their own versions of this. But I mean, for me, what I do. I read the newspaper every day. I'm a big, big fan of that. And so for 60 or 90 minutes a day, I'll be reading the New York Times so that I feel like that gives me a kind of broad overview of just trends and, you know, things that are going on. I also read magazines very religiously. And, you know, that's another great source of information about what's happening, what's going on. I mean, the whole raison d'etre is to report on interesting new developments. So, for me, I'm a subscriber to the ones I read are The New Yorker, Fast Company, Wired, and Inc. And those are really good. And I read, you know, a lot of other places online as well. And then another thing that I really like is there's a free daily email service called Smart Brief. Uh-huh. And they have different editions you can sign up for. You know, they have leadership and cybersecurity and, you know, this, that, and the other. For almost every field, they have something. I read Smart Brief on social media, and that, I think, is particularly useful because social media is, you know, it's at the forefront of how marketing is evolving, and so being aware of social media trends is fundamentally useful to what I do.
That's absolutely fantastic. And we've got a question coming in from George. This is a great question. Okay. Right, Dory, he's asking about books, right? So launching books. I'm going to kind of put an edge on this question, George. Thank you for this question. But he's saying, did the book launches help you spread your idea? Meerkat people, the people that are asking what we're talking about, we're talking the people that have joined. Thank you so much for joining and retweeting this. Thank you, everybody. We're talking about how to come up with an idea and create a following around it. We've got lovely Dory Clark here. She's an author. And of Stand Out and Reinventing You. So she's on the I Have a Dream show. if you haven't got the skills, social skills in a way of communicating, do you think writing a book is a good way of getting your idea out and attracting people to your idea without, you know, while you learn the social skills that are required?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, so I have a couple of thoughts on that. I mean, I definitely do think that writing your ideas and sharing them that way can be very valuable. I do a lot of writing about introversion. Yeah. People seem really interested in that these days because, you know, you have approximately half the population that's introverts. I'm an introvert. And a lot of people take that, I would say, as license to not do networking. They just say, oh, well, I can't do that. That's not for me. Mm-hmm. And so my goal is to try to pop that bubble a little bit and demystify it and say, no. You can't just say, oh, I don't like that. I'm not going to do it. That's shooting yourself in the foot. You need to do it. You just need to find a way that feels comfortable to you.
Yeah.
And so anyway, sharing your ideas in print is actually a really good way of doing it. And so, you know, I'll encourage people to blog or whatever because people don't see it that way necessarily, but it is a form of networking because basically what it is giving people a reason to come to you. Uh-huh. And that's actually the most powerful thing is if they read your ideas and they like it, you know, oh, well, they want to introduce themselves. They want to email you. They want to friend you on LinkedIn or whatever. And so that is a great form of networking for people that may not be so keen on, you know, plunging into a big networking event. So I think that that's powerful. One addendum to that that I'll mention is that I, for many years, was under the impression, and I think this was true for a while, but again, you know, lots of things are changing pretty fast, that you could write a book, and that that book would serve as a tool, as a lever, to get you to be better known.
And
these days, it's not really so much that way. If you are thinking about trying to get a commercially published book, really what I discovered is that they don't want unknown people with great content. They could care less. What they want instead is someone who has a quote-unquote good platform that they can then sell to. Yeah. And so what I realized in the lead up to my getting Reinventing You and Standout published was that in order to make myself credible as a possible candidate for a book being published, I needed to engage in a platform building campaign. So I would say that blogging prior to writing a book is usually the best action course for people who are interested in working with a mainstream publisher.
Joe, I'm so glad you mentioned platform, because even the people here that are network marketers, you know, I know there's quite a few people on the show today, they don't have to depend on the company that they are promoting. You know, what if that company disappears? Where are you then? It's really important to have a platform online where your voice is heard. So regardless if they are still existing or not, you don't get affected. Your work doesn't get affected, and you've created your own following that way. So I love that you mentioned, and platform can be different ways of blogging and podcasting, web TV shows like I have. You know, there's lots of different ways of actually creating a platform online. And I love that. Thank you so much, Dory, for mentioning that. Okay, so back to you. Okay, so tell me something about your mind. Where do you start in the day? I mean, how do you stay focused? How do you stay disciplined? How do you bring out the best in you? How do you measure that? How do you know that you've done your best each day?
That's such an interesting philosophical question. Wow. I think for me, what feels like a successful day is a day where I've been creating rather than just responding. So it feels like a win to me if there's some tangible product at the end of it. In my case, that's usually blog posts or, you know, writing chapters of a book or something like that. That's me putting new ideas out there that can be a contribution to help other people. So that's something that feels pretty good. In terms of, you know, staying productive and, you know, how do I stay focused and things like that, at a really basic level, I mean, I try to, this for me is really the bounty of entrepreneurship, that you have the ability to listen to yourself and your body, I think, in ways that just get stifled when you're working in a corporate environment that requires everyone to do certain things at the same time. So I think that you know, being really attuned to when you are the most productive and working accordingly is really important. You know, just scheduling your creative work at the time when you're feeling your best is really good. Or knowing, for instance, I mean, some days, just because this is how life is, some days you won't sleep well and you'll wake up and you'll kind of feel a little, you know, off. And so being able to say, all right, you know what? Today is a little bit of a loss for certain things, so I'm going to take all the boring stuff on my list that is not very creative but needs to happen anyway, and I'll just do that today so I can kind of, you know, plow through and muddle through when I'm not at my best, so that I can make sure that when I'm trying to do something important, like writing, that I am at my best. Or, you know, not just... just things that I used to do when I was young and, you know, a little bit more stupid about things, like not waiting until like 6 o'clock to have lunch or something, you know, just being a little smarter and more responsible about noticing and keeping myself running in a sane way.
That's brilliant. I love that. And, you know, ideas that you get in the day, like, you know, most of my ideas come in the shower for some reason, right? When I'm very relaxed state.
Yeah.
And I don't have a pen on me at that time, right? So sometimes I've actually even got out of the shower to write it down.
Yeah, totally.
Amazing idea. And I didn't want to disappear. But it's amazing how it works, because you're in different states throughout the day. And some states kind of welcome these ideas. And yeah. Some states don't. So do you use anything tool-wise? Do you capture those ideas? Is it important to capture those ideas and write them down and make a record of them so when you come back, you can actually build upon them?
Yeah, I think it is. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I don't do anything really complicated. If I'm just out and about, I'll just use my smartphone. I'll write them into the notes function of my smartphone, or conversely, I will... use the voice memo function and capture them that way. But yeah, otherwise they evaporate and you're just left saying, oh, what was that idea? You know, if you take the attitude that, like, oh, you'll really, you'll always remember the really good ideas. Like, no, actually you won't. So write them down, because otherwise you'll be kicking yourself later.
And to encourage ideas, guys, reading is very important. So really, you know, expose yourself to related information all the time, so you can understand how other people think as well, and, you know, kind of get your muscles. It's like a practice, isn't it? It's practice of using your brain.
For sure, for sure.
How to use their brain, that's the problem. So use your brains, guys. Okay, excellent. So, okay, we're coming up to the last few minutes. Dory, it's been absolutely remarkable having you, and, you know, I can't wait to meet you in person and, you know, meet you at events. And is there anything that you're planning in UK or anything upcoming in Europe on your agenda?
You know, not immediately, but I will absolutely let you know when I do. I was able to be in Europe last year because the French edition of Reinventing You was released. So I'm hoping that that Standout might get some foreign language editions as well.
Right, excellent, absolutely. Well, I'll be the first to know, okay?
Excellent.
So, guys, you will know through me where Dory is in Europe, so we'll stay connected. Okay, so last couple of things before we wrap up the show, Dory. Clarity. I'm launching my book on clarity. I think it's so important. People do not have any idea. I think it doesn't matter what they want to do, but they just don't know what it is. You know, they're not clear. The people that you work with, do you find this is a common problem?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, people get hung up at different places in the process, but a big one is just being unsure of, you know, either what your goal is, or, you know, just at a very nascent stage, you might know what your goal is, but you have no idea what the first step is. And so you just say, well, that's complicated, so I'll deal with it later. And then it doesn't happen.
Yeah, so very being clear and asking the right questions, etc., is really important for an entrepreneur. Okay, so this show is about creating a change. The mission of the show is creating a change where you can, you know, pick up something on the show that will create a change in your personal or your business life that will transcend to generations. So it's quite a big change that I want people to feel here. I'll be shocked if someone hasn't picked anything up right now. But Dory, if you were asked this question on the street, you know, what is that one thing I need to do to create a change in my business and personal life that will transcend to generations? What would you say that would be?
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. A change that will transcend through generations. I think that that probably the one that I think would be most valuable, I mean, certainly it's valuable in the short term for business development, but I think it is valuable over the long term, is content creation. You know, sharing your ideas, whether it's you know, writing blog posts or writing books or doing a podcast or something like that. And of course, in the short term, the reason that it's valuable is that it's a great business development tool. It is a way to make yourself findable by like-minded people and draw people to you. They hear your ideas and they say, oh, I want more of that. That's fantastic. I love her perspective. But in the longer term, you know, if you're actually thinking about generations, and, you know, you think about how cool would it be? I mean, this is stuff that you can't appreciate when you're 5 years old or 10 years old, but how cool would it be if there was a written record of your grandparents or your great-grandparents' lives and how they saw the world at that time? I mean, that would actually be pretty amazing. And in the past, it was just, you know, maybe you'd find somebody's journal or something like that that's, like, impossible to read with their little old ancient handwriting. But, you know, if we start today doing that, and, you know, for people who want to have kids, if it's thinking about, oh, how do I get known by my children or my grandchildren or my great-grandchildren, you know, not when they're 10 years old and it's like, oh, yeah, I can buy you an ice cream cone, isn't that nice? But instead, if you want them as an adult to know you and to appreciate you and to think about, you know, how cool it is to understand how somebody actually thought in the moment, that's a really good way to do it.
That's absolutely beautiful, Dory. Oh my God, can I keep you? Can I keep you here forever? It's just awesome. I just love the ideas that you have in your brain, and it's just amazing. Right now, when I was 13, Dory, I read, I'm a big fan of poetry, and the 12th century scholar Rumi, guys, if you know who Rumi is, say yes. Rumi is a mystic of the 12th century. He wrote lots of poetry. He's quite famous in Western world now. But I read something. He said that everyone's made for a purpose, a particular work, and that work is put into your heart. And that desire to find out what that is being placed inside you. How do you wake that up? How did you find your purpose? Do you know your purpose? Are you living your purpose, or do you still need to find your purpose? What stage are you at?
So for me personally, I think that, you know, I feel like I may know my purpose now. I certainly didn't start out that way. I mean, much like with my careers, I feel like it's this process of just, like, you know, discovering it through doing, discovering it through iteration, and just kind of plowing your way through it. I mean, the only way that you can get started, realistically, is to just find something that you're kind of interested in and just pursue that and see where it goes. You know, just go in the direction of something you think is cool, and then see where life and opportunity takes you with it. But for me, I think that probably the place where, you know, where now I would see a sense of purpose based, and I'm saying this retrospectively, based on the books that I've written and things like that, is in trying to help other people become aware of the contribution that they can make. What is your personal brand? What is the thing, you know, the special sauce that you bring? And then get better at sharing that with the world, both feeling confident in sharing that with the world and, you know, knowing tactically how to do it. Because, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are obviously very talented, who have lots of good ideas, but if nobody ever hears those ideas or if nobody ever appreciates those ideas, then, like, all right, what was the point? And so I want people to be able to actually have an impact and to get accomplished the things they want to accomplish, to share the things that they have discovered or that they're meant to share. By making it easier for them to know that they should be doing that and to feel comfortable doing that and to know how to do that.
That's absolutely fantastic. I'm so glad you mentioned that. And also, I think moving fast, Dory, you know, moving fast, you know, picking up the pace a little bit, getting more experience, because the more faster you move, the more experience you get. And then also you'd grow quicker as well. And you can't figure out, you know, too many people get hung up, you know, about, oh, that person said that, or this isn't right, or I'm too weak to do this, or, you know, negativity. And, you know, so much time gets wasted. Just go for it. If it doesn't work, move on. Nothing, you know, move fast. I think that's something that I really like to encourage people to do. So I'm sure you've been a fast mover in your life, Tori. But excellent. So as you are on the I Have a Dream show, I have to ask you to share your dream with the audience today.
Yes, certainly. So I would say that, you know, on a micro level for me, you know, my dream is, you know, so I've published two books now, Reinventing You and Stand Out. And so I'm getting excited about the possibility of doing a third book. And so I guess my dream between now and the end of the year is that I would like to be able to sell the proposal for that and to begin starting work on that, so I can learn about a new topic and dive in there. At a macro level, my dream is that I really do, as I was saying earlier, want to help people really feel empowered to be themselves and to share their ideas, share their best ideas, and to do it in a in an authentic way. So, you know, there's nothing I hate more than people who just feel so constrained somehow by what other people are going to think of them or what they're supposed to be doing. That's the saddest thing in the world, because it's one thing, you know, if you're trying and something isn't working, but it's a whole nother thing, and it's really tragic if you're holding yourself back. Right. And so I want to be in a world where we don't have anyone who's holding themselves back, because to me that's just an utter waste.
That's absolutely beautiful. And what is the price of your dream, Dory? What are you willing to do to achieve those dreams? Because I think when people have these amazing dreams, I mean, some dreams I've heard, they're like, wow, but they're not willing to pay the price for it, because every dream has a price that you have to pay as a person that's made those dreams. You need to become a person to achieve them, right? So Understanding the price that you need to pay, what is that?
Yeah, very interesting question. I mean, I think that to a certain extent, you have to, if you're going to be excelling professionally and spending a lot of time doing that, which, you know, it is an investment. I mean, I want to try to fashion myself into being one of the top business thinkers. And so that takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of travel, a lot of time working. Certainly not everybody would necessarily be willing to do that. But I mean, at a really tactical level, there was a woman that I was involved with for a while, for about 2.5 years, and she was, I mean, there were other issues as well, but she was really hostile to my business travel schedule, and just felt really upset that she kept saying, like, oh, well, you know, the best times of your life are when you're, you know, on the road, and that's all you really care about is working, and, you know, we're spending the best times of your life apart. And, you know, she was very, very highly critical of that. Yeah. And so, anyway, we broke up because I thought, you know what, I'm not going to spend, I mean, you know, I think she, I really cared about her a lot. She cared about me a lot. I think she would have liked to have gotten married, probably. But I thought, you know what? Who you marry is the most important decision that you make ever. The most important decision. And I'm not going to make the wrong choice. I am not going to choose poorly on this. And to choose somebody that wants to try to limit me and limit my potential future success, I want somebody who's going to be supportive of me for that. And if I can't have someone on board, it won't work.
Somebody that empowers you, you know, someone that comes into your life, you're already doing remarkable things, but that add that extra spark in your life that you just want to do more and more of it, you know? So very important. Anyone's about to get married, do not do it until you feel they're empowering you.
Yeah.
That's fantastic, Dory. Dory, thank you so much. I mean, how much can I thank you for your amazing contribution today? Everyone that's been on the show, they stayed up till now. You know, it's been over an hour. I want to congratulate you for doing that. You know, it shows that you want something. You're looking for something. And, you know, I'm so, so pleased that I can serve you on your journey. But as a bonus for staying this long, we've got a wonderful bonus from Dory. Dory is a workbook. Can you just explain what the bonus is and where they can get that from?
Yes, absolutely. So my book, Stand Out, my most recent book, is really about how to come up with your own breakthrough idea and build a following around it. So for any of you guys listening, presumably there's some degree of interest in this question of how do you really stand out? How do you get known as being among the best in your field, the person that people want to work with or buy from? And so I created a workbook that is 42 pages. At the end of every section of Stand Out, I have a series of ask yourself questions. I compiled them together. It's 139 questions that walks you through step by step the process of discovering what what is different and unique about you, how to turn that into an idea and concept that you become known for, and then how to gain public recognition around it. It's also very handsome because it was designed by the same book designers that that did my book. So that is available for free, and for folks who are interested in downloading it, you can go to my website, doreyclark.com, which is DoreyClark.com, and you can get the free 42-page workbook in your mailbox.
That's lovely, because a lot of people would want to know how to go forward, but they don't know the questions to ask. You know, that's really important, the right questions. So, guys, this book is going to give you those questions to ask and form your idea and, you know, get it down on paper. This is so, so important. But thank you so much, Dory. I'll put the link underneath the website. Dory's books are available under the video, guys, on Meerkat. Go to ihaveadreamshow.com/Dory Clark. And I'll be sending out replays for the show as well to remind you anything that you missed out or, that you want to share as well. There's a prize for sharing. Watch out for your email box and see what that is. But Dory, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing yourself on the I Have a Dream show today. And I'll be definitely reaching out to you with the replay as well. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you, guys. Dream big, take massive action. So one day I can bring you onto the I Have a Dream show and share your unique journey with the world. Thank you so much. Take care. Until the next episode, we've got the amazing Elena Cardone, a wife of Grant Cardone, and she will be sharing how she's just absolutely amazing in sales, and where you don't have to be aggressive, you know, the swearing and all that. I know a lot of people do tend to do that, but those people that are a little bit more wary of that, how to actually be a very, very good, strong salesperson, but watch your mouth as well. Take care, guys. See you soon. Thank you, Dory.
Hey, it's Princess Fizz again. I hope you found this show extremely, extremely valuable. Do like and comment and leave a review for this show, and don't forget to subscribe and share with your friends, whoever it will benefit. Go to ihaveadreamshow.com/shows if you want to watch the video recording of this show, and leave a comment, write to me. I'd love to hear from my listeners about any suggestions, any takeaways that you had, any suggestions for improvements, and make sure that you sign up to the newsletter as well so you don't miss another episode and you get notified by email. I love you loads. Dream big, chase those dreams, make them a reality so I can bring you onto the I Have a Dream show and share your unique journey with the world.